On Life and Technology Today, we spoke with Simon on last week's show, and we're speaking to him again today about a totally different subject. Simon Hackett created the internet company Internode, and now he sits as a director on the National Broadband Network's board of directors. Now, Simon, I want to talk to you today about starting up a technology business in Australia, and I also want to talk to you about electric cars, because you are a car nut, and you're now an electric car nut as well. Let's talk about starting a business in Australia first up, a technology business. Is Australia a good place to do that at the moment?
Look, I think it still is. You know, it's got a bit of a tainted reputation as being a bad place because some of the settings are wrong at the moment. The settings about share price options are wrong. Settings about a few other things are wrong. It's still a great place to start a business because it's a great place to live. And technology businesses are about ideas. And so if you've got a great place to live and a great idea, well, can't do better than this.
You started Internode and you hit roadblocks through the life of that business, and it's quite serious ones. I mean, I think you've been quite public in saying that the business almost fell over at least once. How do you make sure that stuff doesn't happen?
I don't think you can make sure it doesn't happen. I think you just have to learn from your mistakes and hope the mistakes are survivable. I mean, the thing you're referring to, yeah, is that we got to about 15 people the first time and the business nearly failed because we wound up with some of those people were the wrong people. Some of those people were promoted to the wrong spots. I took my eyes off the ball for a while and suddenly discovered I nearly lost the thing. And we had to knock it back from 15 people to six or seven. You know, we had to have the day. And then I spent the following year literally staring at every single incoming bill and every single, you know, income source, holding the business together by hand again. I thought I'd got over that, and I realised that I hadn't. What I learned out of that was when you start hiring people, easiest thing to do is hire the wrong people. Better not to hire someone at all than to hire the wrong one. I got much more selective about hiring people. The second time we got to 15 people, we didn't stop, and we got to 450.
Wow.
You know, it worked.
You began your business, you were the major owner, you were the owner of the business. Other businesses floated or took on investors. You didn't. Why?
Yeah, interesting question. I just kind of never felt like it. I actually liked running a business where I had majority control of it. There's another business in my sector, iNet, that's kind of the polar opposite to Internode. iNet listed early. They brought in external capital and they grew their business by acquiring other businesses very aggressively, very successfully. We grew our business organically. We just built at the rate we could build. I did the good old-fashioned thing. We wouldn't buy something until we'd earn enough money to afford it. Mm. I think what it proved for me is that actually neither of those is wrong. You can run a successful business either way. You don't have to list to make it work. Mm. If it suits you to list, that's great. But if you don't, that's not a failure. It can work perfectly well as a private business. And some private businesses are actually enormous.
Mm. You and Michael Malone, founder of iNet, you were two of the best known internet business entrepreneurs in Australia. You've since sold your internet business to iNet. Did you and Michael decide to do that a long time ago? Had there been discussions? Because you only went through that process last year.
Yeah, Michael and I have known each other for almost the entire length of both companies' existences. You know, we've known each other, been friends for a long time. We've watched each other's business grow, and actually we both enjoy the experiment of seeing those two business paths happen. Because iNet grows by acquisition, naturally Michael wanted to buy my business, and I didn't feel like selling it. And so for the longest time, we had a standing kind of quiet agreement, which was that my business wasn't for sale, but if I ever changed my mind about that, he'd be the first guy I call. Actually, a story Michael related back to me only the other day is in mid-90s, he sent me an email yet again suggesting he'd be happy to look at buying the business. And in about, a couple of years ago, I replied to that bit of email saying, let's talk about it.
Fantastic. Let's talk about startup technology companies in Australia, because you are part of that. What do you look for in supporting a technology startup in this country?
The things that excite me, Charlie, are about things that technology businesses that I understand, that I think are doing good things. And so if those two criteria are met, right, if I understand what the business is and why it works, if it excites me and I think I can add something to it beyond just money, then I'm likely to want to get involved in it. So I'm interested in investing in things that meet those criteria. So for instance, I love renewable energy and that sort of stuff. I like battery technology, including electric cars. So I've invested in a battery company because that's what I understand and what I'm interested in. So that sort of thing.
Let's talk about batteries and electric cars, because I read plenty of press releases from the guys at Google who are announcing the self-driving car. From Mitsubishi, you have the electric car. Watch what Tesla's doing with their electric cars. I don't see any electric cars on the road, or very, very few of them. And when I see them in the showroom, I think I need over $50,000 for this, and if it was just running petrol, it'd be $20,000. Where are we up to? Where are we at to with the stage rollout of electric cars here?
Great question. We are on the verge of them becoming very visible. What's going on with the appearance of electric cars in the world this time around? This is the third time electric cars have tried to exist in the world, by the way. Is that it's an exponential growth curve, and like the internet exponential growth and adoption curve, nothing seems to be happening for the first half of that curve, and then suddenly everyone's got one. It's exactly what happened with internet access. You know, no one you knew had broadband, and then suddenly anyone that wanted it had it. It seemed like it was overnight. This is absolutely happening this time. So we're on, right on the verge of it. Tesla in particular, the real game changer this time, are on the verge of selling cars in volume in Australia. They've sold their Roadster, which I was the first customer of in Australia, yep. Two-seat sports car. I brought the first one of those in 2009. But the Model S, their absolute game changer car, you know, car of the year everywhere that anyone evaluates a car, you know, that good. Yep. They'll be on sale here in the next few months. I am their number one ticket holder to receive one. And those cars are so good that they'll turn heads. You know, they'll really change things.
Is it right that the luxury car tax applies to electric cars?
Yeah, this is a bit crazy. We are annoyingly one of the only first world countries with no incentives for electric cars at all. Everywhere else, the US famously, but everywhere else has got some sort of incentive. Here, the luxury car tax, the tax on presumably to save the local car industry, which is a fascinating concept these days, applies to electric cars. And because they do cost more up front, as you pointed out, that means that they in fact adversely affect the cost of an electric car more than the cost of a conventional one. So one of the reasons it's more expensive is because those taxes hit it harder. The point about electric cars, though, is they've got a lower total cost of ownership. They cost more to buy up front, but they cost almost nothing to run. And so their total cost of ownership is lower. And as that message gets out, people will take them up. More importantly, people like Tesla are selling a luxury car so that they can build that car at decent margins in order to fund the delivery of the car they'll be putting on the market in 2 or 3 years' time, which is a low-cost car. You know, think about, you know, 20 or 30 grand, not 50, 60, 70. And that car then becomes the game changer. The batteries are the thing that are finally getting cheap enough that if you project the cost of the batteries 5 years from now, there won't be enough of a cost difference to slow someone down from buying one at the car dealer. And so this next 3 to 5 years, that's when the exponential curve of adoption goes up as the cost of the batteries go down, and suddenly it will be normal to see someone driving an electric car. They want, you know, conventional cars don't disappear. This is just a third choice of motor. You know, today you walk into a car dealer and the guy will say, so do you want that RAV4 in petrol or electric? Oh, sorry, diesel or petrol, right? How about do you want it in diesel, petrol or electric? There is an electric RAV4. You can buy it now. It has a Tesla drivetrain in it in the US. But here, yeah, it's all just going to, it's just on the verge of happening.
Fantastic. Look, Simon, it's always great to talk to you. Thank you for spending some time with us over the last couple of weeks on the show. And we look forward to speaking to you once again on Life and Technology.
My pleasure, Charlie. Been great fun.